The broadcast. Okay.
Let's do it.
Ladies and gentlemen, DS106ers around the world, welcome for tonight's remote broadcast of DS106. I am currently in New Orleans getting ready to give a presentation tomorrow morning, and Tim Owens was kind enough and flexible enough to do this via Skype with me.
Hello.
Welcome, Tim. I'll introduce you in a second, but just a couple of things before we get started with Tim. Notice that on Twitter, we're going to be using that as a back channel. Questions you have for Tim, issues you have, just put them in there and hashtag them DS106. The other thing is Tim was nice enough to provide us a series of links and resources for the class tonight and for his talk tonight. So be sure to open that in a separate browser page and actually follow along. Now, this is interesting. I asked Tim Owens about 2 weeks ago if he would talk to us during the design week of class, and I asked him specifically because about a month and a half ago, I didn't know who Tim Owens was. We may have had back and forth, but it wasn't until DS106 and he started creating this unbelievable stuff and went haywire when I asked people to submit assignments for the design and visual parts of this class that obviously he came on the radar of me and many other people in terms of the stuff he was doing. And I just really liked the way he framed the work he was doing with design and the assignments he had. So I actually asked Tim, and he was kind enough. Tim is at Longwood University, which I'll be going down to Longwood, Tim, in about 3 weeks to talk about blogging and stuff. So I think we can get together then.
But that'd be sweet.
That is cool. But he's at Longwood, and he was nice enough to join us tonight and talk about design. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce Tim Owens, who's going to talk to us about, and the title of his talk is, We Are All Artists. Tim, take it away.
We are all artists. That's right. Hey, guys. So my name's Tim Owens from Longwood University, which is a huge, huge town of Farmville, Virginia. It's not just a game on Facebook. It is an actual town in Virginia. And that's where I live. I came here to Longwood University, and so I got my degree here in studio art and just didn't find a way to leave here. So I work in the IT department here. I'm a computer technician by day and a rock star by night. I should just give you a little bit of background about myself. This is not about me, and so I'm not going to talk too much about myself. But the thing is, I was a computer science major when I came into Longwood because I like computers. And so I guess I kind of thought, well, computer science has the word computer in it, so that must be what I should do, you know. And I'm sure like half of you are going, yep, I had no clue what I was going to do when I came into the school. And so, and a lot of you were smart enough to just say, come in undeclared. And I just thought that was for wimps, like choose your major or get out. So I chose computer science, and then after the first semester, failed that and decided to find something different. So I was like, well, what can I do if it's not computer science? Because that's boring. People are just sitting there sort of typing out code, and it just wasn't for me. I was a lot more expressive, I guess is the word you could use. So I was trying to figure out what I could do, and after like one semester, I had worked over the summertime at a sign shop, and I thought, you know what? I could be an art major. I could do like graphic design stuff, and that seems kind of cool. And it's weird for me because like when I first thought about that, I was like, well, I can't do that though, because I'm not an artist. Like I can't, you know, art major is for someone who paints every day or somebody who has a sketchbook around them all the time and really dark rimmed glasses and thinks like really deep thoughts. Like that's not me. And so I thought, you know, I can't come in as an art major. A lot of these schools, they make you actually try it out. Like if you want to be an art major, you're going to have to shoot your stuff and stand before a board. And this is what you're going to have to do. But I thought, well, I should at least ask. And Longwood actually doesn't require that. They'll take anybody, which is awesome because that's what got me into the program. And they said, yeah, you want to be an art major? Done. You're in. I actually emailed someone and said, I'm interested in doing this. And they emailed me back and said, here's schedule for the next semester. Like, how cool is that? Like, instead of, like, they just made the decision for me. And that was perfect because then I couldn't second guess myself. It's just, this is what it is, and this is the classes you'll be taking. And I just got so excited. So that's my background. One thing I'm curious about, and I was asking Jim earlier, is what is your major? What kind of person takes DS106? It seems almost like an elective course, like something that could be fit into anything. My guess is, and I don't know, but my guess is a lot of you are not art majors, that a lot of you probably don't consider yourself designers. And so I'm wondering, you know, hit up on Twitter and tell me what your major is, and I'll keep an eye on that, and Jim's going to let me know. But, you know, the more I got to thinking about it, the more I thought, you know, we're all kind of artists in this, and we don't see it that way. And the first thing that I mentioned here is that creativity is not inherited. This is something that a lot of people think is that, you know, oh, that person, they're just so creative. And they kind of form this idea in their head that they were born and it's just a part of who they are. Like it's this gene. Like, you know, this person was made to do sports. This person is a perfect music person. And like all of this is built into our genetic code. And that as soon as we're born, we get separated and the Mozarts are over here and the factory workers are over here and somewhere maybe out in the middle, you know. And that's just not the case. Because, like, the thing about creativity, the thing about design work is that you can learn to be creative. You can learn to be an amazing designer. You can be an artist. So someone, Callie from Beach, mentioned that she's an English major, creative writing, which is awesome. History major, history. That's awesome. So here's the thing. Like, when we look at sports, we don't assume right off the bat that somebody can just walk onto a field with no training whatsoever and can go and start playing soccer and just be amazing. Maybe it exists, but for the most part, we accept the idea that it takes practice, that you're going to have to work at it every single day, maybe several times a day. And so what we need to do then is think about that in terms of the arts and, like, you know, start to accept the idea that if you practice at this every day, if this is something that you decide you want to be someone that can make beautiful things, then you need to practice at it every day. You have to decide that it's important enough that you put time in and that you can do it. You know, I mentioned Mozart and, you know, some people, they are born creative that, you know, they just sort of had a knack for it. And from the outside, it might seem like that. A lot of times what it is that they live in a creative environment. Have you ever seen, like, where someone's parents, like, you look at someone who's an amazing artist and their parents, like, one of them's in a band and, you know, the mother's maybe a writer, you know, and you just think, man, that whole family is just in it. You can just tell, you know, like, they're all just so hungry for art. And so it's just a part of who they are. Well, that's really, you know, that's what it's about. Like, when you have a creative environment like that, then that fosters creativity. So, you know, it's not a guarantee, of course, but there's a good chance that if someone's parents are creative, then, you know, then their son or daughter is also going to be. And so I had this, like, idea that that's kind of what DS-106 is for us. Like, we're all sitting around and, you know, for the online course, it's like I've never met any of you, but I still feel like I know you. And you are all a part of this environment that is fueling creativity for me. And I feel like, it, you know, like as you all branch out and you start to learn, like I'm learning with you. And I feel like it's pushing us all further and further ahead. So that's what DS-106 can do for you. If you decide that this is what you want, that this is something that you want to be, then you practice it every day, and this environment is going to form that catalyst for you. So I don't want you to accept the lie that you weren't born creative. You know, don't make that your crutch. Don't say, you know, I'm a history major, I'm a political science major, I'm a sociology major, or I'm just taking class for an easy A because I heard Jim's easy. You know, he's not easy, but maybe that's what you told yourself. Don't accept that crush. Don't accept that lie that maybe you're not creative, because you are and you can be. And, you know, if you want something, then every single day you hack away at it and you're going to get better. I think that's something that Daily Shoot is already showing us. You know, Alan Levine posed the question, is Daily Shoot helping with photography, with your photography? And for a lot of you, I think it is. There are probably several of you who just, you know, most of the photos that you took from day to day are probably of y'all just partying or hanging out or, you know, random landscapes. Here's a picture of the campus or something like that. But then when you get those creative prompts and every single day you're forced to think outside the box, that's pushing you further. Those are the kind of things that are going to make you better at this. One thing that I came across the other day was have any of y'all ever read Dilbert? So I kind of like Dilbert. It's kind of a goofy blog. Maybe it speaks to me because like I'm in an office environment every day, so I find it funny. But the thing is, the guy who writes for Dilbert, Scott Adams, he draws those comics. He's got this blog, and this blog is just he just comes up with these crazy, crazy ideas. And a lot of times, they're just off the wall things. Other times, there's something where maybe it could happen, and he just sort of thinks about that. And one of the ideas that he had, hold on, I'm going to move my mic here. One of the things he had was this idea that people are more creative when they're hungry. So there's this blog post, and it's in my blog. I link to it, called "Breakfast is Overrated." And the idea of it was that if you look around at the people who are most creative, and this idea doesn't apply to me so much, parts of it anyway, but the idea is that the people who are more creative are usually don't weigh as much. That they're the skinnier people usually end up being more creative, or that more creative people end up not being as heavy. Well, I'm a little bit more heavy set, so that doesn't apply to me. But his thinking was that you're more creative when you're hungry, and so you do your best work in the morning. Maybe you don't have a big breakfast, you don't eat at all, or maybe you work really late at night. Maybe that's the time where you really fuel your creativity. You had dinner back at 5 o'clock, and then you maybe hung out with some friends, didn't do a whole lot. By about 9 or 10 o'clock, you start thinking, oh, maybe I could start doing something now. By midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, maybe you're the type of person that really starts hacking away at an idea. And then you go to bed in the morning, it's still driving you nuts. You're thinking of these things, even if you're not a morning person, by the time you're up, maybe had a cup of coffee. That's sort of the time where you work your best. Then you have lunch or something like that, and you get full. And maybe then it's it just sort of falls off. You get tired. You want to take a nap. You're not really thinking. But this idea that we're more creative when we're hungry—it's wild, isn't it? And I thought about that. Not just when we're hungry, but that when we're faced with challenges, when we're uncomfortable, that could be a breeding ground for these spurts of creativity. How many of y'all saw Tom Woodward's strange photos? They're crazy, aren't they? Like, I mean, he's done, I think, three of them so far, and they just haunt me when I look at them. I look at these photos, and I'm immediately thinking, like, did he just walk up to someone and just say, let me take your picture? None of them are smiling for the most part. They're sort of looking at him funny, just sort of like, and there's just so much tension there. And I think about it, and I'm just like, oh my goodness, he must have been so uncomfortable doing that. And yet, it's amazing artwork, right? Like, think about the things that you're doing that are the best. They're not the easy thing, okay? Things that don't take a lot of time end up not being very interesting. The things that are interesting, the things that are creative, and the beautiful designs are the things that make you the most uncomfortable, that push you to your limits. And so, that's my word for you there is that, get creative by accepting the fact that you're not going to be comfortable. Get uncomfortable because that's what this class is about. I was thinking about the things that, when you look at the assignments that have been posted so far, and what makes an interesting assignment? What makes things viral right now? There's this idea that, you can sort of drive things to be viral. And I never know what assignments we're going to be doing. This four icons thing seems really interesting. The five card flicker is amazing. There's all these assignments. And Jim wants you to create some of your own assignments. And so I'm trying to give you some ideas on what you can do to start thinking outside the box, make yourself uncomfortable, and get creative. So I have a couple ideas. The first thing that came to mind, and this is really funny. So I'm a big coffee drinker. I don't know if there are some other coffee drinkers out there, but I love coffee. And I'm not like one of those coffee snobs. So stop right there if you think that I'm over here with my French press, like brewing my Jamaican whatever. It's not like that. Okay. I just like coffee. You know, it can be gas station coffee and I'll drink it. So like a couple months ago, I go to buy some coffee filters from Food Lion, and I'm a generic brand person, you know, because I'm cheap. And I buy this box of coffee filters. And the thing about these coffee filters, I encourage you to do this, right? If you go to Food Lion and they've got this generic brand this morning, just so I could make sure I was right here and that they still had it anyway, their generic brand's called like Home 360. And it's just a 50-count pack of coffee filters, which you would think if something's generic, that's not going to be any design to the box whatsoever. In fact, that I'm probably, once I open the box, I'm probably going to have to find somewhere else to store because the thing's going to fall apart on me because it's cheap, right? But this box is so incredibly designed. Like the package design of this, you can tell that someone said, we could do this differently. So if you've ever bought coffee filters, you know that the biggest problem with it is getting one coffee filter out. They're all stuck together, and you can't peel them away. And so this is a problem, right? With any design, you've got these problems, and you're trying to find a solution to that. It's not just about entertainment. It's about finding solutions to problems. And so with this person said, you know, we should find a way to really fix this. And I love it because it's the cheap coffee filters where they found the solution. So if you get one of these boxes, and I've got one in front of me, I should take a picture and maybe I'll post it on the blog there. But really, for a lot of fun, go to filters and take a look at what's on the box. So it's got this series of perforations that you have to push and pull and everything, and it sets up this contraption. There's a sticker underneath, and basically what happens is you push your finger into the box, it sticks to one of the coffee filters, and then you pull the whole box upwards, and one coffee filter pops out. It pulls away from the rest, and the rest stick in the box, and then you take your one coffee filter. It makes no sense on radio right now, so you have to see this. So you have to go there and buy a box of these coffee filters. But it's crazy, right? Because these are the cheap coffee filters, and someone decided that was important, and that's all it took. And so I buy this box of coffee filters, and I'm thinking, that's incredible design. That's taking something completely ordinary, taking something that wasn't worth anything, and making it extraordinary. And so that's the first idea that I had for like what kind of designs work and what kind of assignments are interesting, is taking something just completely mundane and making it interesting. That's kind of the idea with mashups, right? So you're taking two things that, okay, this might be cool, this is not so cool, this is just kind of boring, but you put them together and you've got something wild. I know a lot of people like Glee. I love Glee. Okay. And my favorite parts of Glee are when they're mashing up music left and right. If you haven't watched Glee, you should, because a lot of the music in there is just wild because they're doing things differently. They're taking a song that might have been popular on its own, you know, or it might have just been okay. And they're doing it in a different way. You know, they're making something out of it. And all of a sudden you're like, whoa, this is really cool stuff. So Glee really ties into this because, right, they're taking something ordinary, they're making it extraordinary. One of the things I'm going to link to as a source for you to use in your design work is something called the Prelinger Archives. It's from the Internet Archive, and these are old videos. So if you've ever seen on TV when someone pulls up a video from like the 50s, way early video, I don't even know how to describe it. These are just archived old videos, and these things are so boring. I mean, they were for everything from like how to protect yourself from nuclear war and bombs and to, you know, what kind of new kitchen things were coming out. Disney had a whole bunch of these things. They're just really old videos, black and white, you know, talking about all kinds of different things. And these are so boring, but they are perfect for mashups. I encourage you, click that link, watch some of these videos, and figure out how you can play around with them, because they are perfect, and you can make something awesome about it with them. The Super Bowl halftime. How many people watch Super Bowl? So the Super Bowl was kind of interesting. The halftime, look, I'm a Black Eyed Peas fan, but it was awful. It was just absolutely awful. I mean, it was just, I don't even know how to describe it. I love Black Eyed Peas. But the thing about them is they sound good because they've had so much processing work done to it that to see them live, it was just so horrible. And what saved the halftime show? What saved it for them? Slash coming out of the ground playing music. You know, I heard someone say Slash, and the other thing was the, oh crap, what's the song from? Dirty Dancing. The song that they did from Dirty Dancing, those were the two defining moments for these people, were the things that weren't just about Black Eyed Peas, but it was about when they took something else and made it awesome, right? So that's the thing. You've got to not just find something and say, well, I can do that, but you've got to make it better and make it extraordinary. The other thing is you can take something really complex and you can make it simple. I had this professor in an art class. He taught jewelry and stained glass and things like that. And he always said, simple but complex, simple but complex. That was like, I mean, that's his catchphrase. He was constantly telling us that if we could take things and we could break them down, and then we could break them down further and even further until we had something that was very simple, but there would be complexity in that. And it makes no sense at first until you think about it more and more and you actually start seeing it. Look at some of these really popular things that we're doing right now. Minimalist design, some of these posters that you all have been doing of movies, incredible, incredible. And there's nothing to them, okay? But there's everything to it, because it's not just that you're taking a whole movie and summarizing it in a paperclip. It's that that paperclip defines the movie. So you're taking something complex, you know, 2 hours worth of a movie, cut it down to a paperclip, but then saying this paperclip means everything. Some of the iconography, so those four icons that we've been doing, you know, speaking of icons even, I've got a picture on my blog of this bathroom stall. And I told people earlier, I said, this urinal that I knew I had been to it years ago. It was on Longwood's campus and I had to find it because this logo stood out to me. I've got to open this up so I can remember what it is. But the thing about it is, good icons will just pop out at you. And you just say, that makes complete sense. That's so cool. So there's a thing here. Let me find this real quick. Bathroom stall icon. So there's a link on there to this. I literally went to my dining hall here at Longwood and took this picture because this stares me in the face when I went to take a piss. And it's the first impression logo or something. But here's their icon is the letter I, but the picture is literally a guy standing over a urinal taking a piss. And I was just like, that's genius. And then if you look at it even more, the letter F is inside of the letter I, and that's what makes up this person. You have to see the picture to understand what I'm talking about. So if you go to my blog and you click on the bathroom stall icon, you'll understand exactly what I'm talking about. It's taking this complex idea of, you know, what these people make, urinals, and making it something so simple as to break it down to the two letters of their name. So it's ideas like that. Pixel art. Have you seen some of this? Like, the thing about it is, you know, we used to play all these video games where they didn't have millions and millions of pixels. It was like these 8-bit games. Well, now you see a lot of people doing design work and they're breaking it down into some of the icon logos and the superhero logos. All it was just a couple blocks of color. And from that, you could get, oh, yeah, that's the Green Hornet. Or, oh, yeah, that's Batman. That's Wolverine right there. Just because it's orange here, it's black there. Just a couple pixels, and you knew what it was. And that right there told you the whole story of what you needed to know about it, just from those few pixels. Newspaper blackout poetry. You take this entire newspaper, all of these words, and you take a magic marker and you start blacking out all those words except for one letter there, one word here, everything, until you have this piece of poetry, just a couple words here and there. You know, you're taking away all the noise, and then from that is something interesting popping out at you. There's an assignment there called I Made Tea, and it's all these words you can paste in a whole paragraph, and what it wants you to do is just like break it down into like, okay, if I say I walked into the room, can I just say like I walked? Like, isn't that the same thing? So you thing you can play around with on their website, I made tea. And if you click on made, you could say I boiled water into making tea, or I walked into the kitchen and I boiled the water to make tea. So, you know, the reverse ideas that you could take this simple idea and it could mean so much more. But in the end, EAT. There were three words to that, and that's all that there was to it, and it meant a whole lot more than that. Something else that's really interesting is this idea of vintage design. So it harkens back to this idea of nostalgia. You know, I mentioned the pixel art and the 8-bit idea, but in the Prelinger art, Jim mentioned on Tuesday that the Boba Fett invoice type thing. I just think so awesome. And you can do that in so many different aspects. Take stuff and make it look like it was from the 60s. You know, what does an iPad commercial look like if it had aired in the 50s? Boom, right there. There's another assignment for you. You know, so vintage design, taking these ideas of, you know, what would this have looked like if it had done in this style? You know, everybody loves seeing stuff like that. And another thing that can really fuel ideas for you is finding inspiration in every aspect of your world. These are just some ideas that you can do, is to like go out to a store, go to the mall, and start looking at the packaging on stuff. That's the only way I found out about these Food Lion coffee filters. But there's even wilder stuff. So have you ever been in like an Asian store? The packaging on some of the stuff, especially like the soda bottles and things, are insane. So go in there and start looking at stuff. Just get inspiration from things like that. Go to the library. And this is related to one of those assignments, children's books. Children's book illustrations, some of them are just wild. You can summarize a whole story, idea of things that are happening, into just this very simple illustrations. Go in there and start looking at some of the children's books inside the library. Antique stores, if you're into the whole nostalgia thing, like totally go into an antique store and start looking at some of the signage on the walls. Start looking at, you know, if they have old books in there, old picture books, old magazines and things. Anything inside an antique store is just ripe for inspiration. These are sort of like almost don't exist anymore, I guess, with the iTunes and stuff. But music stores, like the store that used to sell all the records and stuff, if you have one of these still, definitely go in there and start looking at album art. Album art is a ripe source of inspiration, especially on old records. Like some of the best artwork ever happening was happening on these old record covers. So go in there and start looking at some of that. The old Beatles covers and just all kinds of crazy things, and so many different types of designs too. You could spend all day in there and just get inspiration from all of that. So you think, okay, that's cool. I know where to get some inspiration now. I know that I can be creative, but I still don't feel like I have all the tools, and I don't feel like I know exactly what I'm talking about, which is cool. So here are a couple tools that'll help you. So one thing on here is something by Adobe. It's called Color, K-U-L-E-R. They spell it differently, but the link is on my blog there. So you can go there, and what you can do is you can get ideas for colors for the different design projects that you're doing. And you can fly around all the different colors and things like that. A lot of the times when I'm looking at some of this design work that you all are doing, and it's amazing design work, it's just that some of the colors are a little off on it. And what I mean by that is that when you look at color, you've got warm colors and you've got cold colors, and some of them have different contrast. So the idea is that if you have a dark blue poster and you put black text over top of it, you're not going to be able to see it as well as if you had done white. So things like that. So to make this very easy for you, if you go to Adobe's color website, you can get a palette of colors and start playing around with that. Figure out ones go on top of each other, and then use that as a palette for your work. It's so awesome. And you can get inspiration from photos with that too. You can make a photo, pull out colors from that photo, and use them for a project. Take one of your DailyTube photos that you really like, and then start taking the colors out of it. Make that the palette for your next assignment. Just do it. It will be awesome, I promise you, because the world around us is beautiful. This one was mentioned before, the Noun Project. If you've never visited this and you're doing the four icon project, you're totally, I don't want to say you're doing it wrong, but you're making this harder than it has to be, I promise you. Because if you go to the nounproject.com, they've got all of these icons for you, and they're completely free for you to use. And there are tons of icons. I'm not just talking like a recycle bin. I'm talking like everything. So you go in here and you start looking around for what icons you want to use. And you can download those icons, you can put them together, and you've got your summary for a movie. So if you're doing an icon project, check that site out. A lot of you have mentioned Picnic. I'm going to open this one up. Have you ever been to Aviary Tools? So Aviary, aviary.com. A lot of you I know just mentioned don't deal with Photoshop. You don't have Photoshop. It's expensive, and it's really overkill. It's like using a hatchet to get out a staple out of your hand or something. It's insane. So you don't have to use Photoshop. If you go to aviary.com, they have this whole suite of tools, and it's not just an image editor. You can take screenshots using Firefox. You can make music on their website. There's an audio editor. There's a color editor for you to play around with colors and to add effects to videos and things like that. There are tons of tools on there, and it's all free for you to use. So absolutely check that out. What else do I have in here? Oh, DaFont. Jim totally stole this from me, and I blame him for it because he had to go on Tuesday and not me. But related back to that icon project especially, but really just in general, if you're looking for good type and good fonts to use for your project, go to DaFont. I'm not going to rehash the same thing he said, but if you go there, the one thing that I wanted to point out, I'm going to go to the site so I know what I'm talking about, is they have a whole section called Dingbats, which means nothing to you at first. Dingbats are basically icons. So if you go in there, and they've got them separated by section, they've got some for games, some for like Asian, alien, TV and movie logos and things like that. But all of these are icons. And so what happens? Barcode. So let's say you wanted a barcode on one of your design projects. Well, you go to the barcode section, and they've got all these different ones here, and you download this font, and then you just start typing letters and numbers, and this barcode appears. Same thing if you go to, let's say, music. I go to music, the first one's like rock stars, and there's these pictures of people throwing guitars down on the ground and headphones. I think, those are awesome icons. I want to use one of those. Well, you download the, if you click on the name there, it will, letter is the icon. Go to that font, and you could be in Microsoft Word, and you just type the letter A, and there's this man throwing down a guitar. It's insane. So, you know, DaFont is not just for fonts. You can get great icons from there as well. So check that out. Stock Exchange. So a lot of you want to be able to use photos inside of your design work, and you don't really know, okay, you can get photos from Flickr, and you know that, but what if you have other stuff that you want to do? Stock Exchange is a website where people upload photos that they have taken themselves from all around the world, and they tell you you can use them in your work. Some of them have licenses applied to them, but if I go on there, I'm going to go in here now, and I'm just going to say like swimming pool because I need a picture of a pool. And all these pictures show up, and there's pictures of the ladder beside the pool. There's a picture of just water, and that would be perfect, right? I could take this picture of water, and I look at it. And if under availability, when you go to a picture, availability, if it's the standard restrictions apply, use it. Sometimes it'll say you can use it, but you have to credit someone with that work. And so you can do that, right? You can put it, you can create something interesting with it, and credit that person by linking back to where you got the photo with person's name. And all of these things are free for you to use. So take advantage of that, right? This is the perfect time for us all to rise up as artists and designers because there's so much that we can do. As far as inspiration, I'm going to go through a couple of these, but these are places that you can be going to on a daily basis. If you're down with the RSS reader, if you've got Google Reader rocking right now, go to some of these websites and just subscribe to them. You know, and so then you're getting that stuff daily. It's pulling into your feed are these ideas of designs that you can use. Behance.net is a website where they show some awesome, awesome artist work. Smashing Magazine has tutorials all the time of how to do stuff better. I was reading stuff on there just the other day of dealing with Photoshop and how to use gradients, how to add type and make it look better, how to make things look a little bit more three-dimensional without looking cheesy. All this kind of stuff is on there. Threadless is a whole site on t-shirt design. And I don't mean that they're going to teach you t-shirt design. They sell t-shirts, right? But the designs that they have are just incredible. So just as a source of inspiration, go to threadless.com and just look at some of the t-shirts that they have in there. They're hilarious. The photos that they take of people wearing these t-shirts are funny. It's a lot of fun. I don't even know how to say this one. Abduzito is a website where they feature great design work as well. So go there. There's a site here. I mentioned the business cards. You know, I don't carry around business cards anymore, but a lot of people still do. And you've got this tiny little card. And on this card, you're selling yourself. So then that right there, those restrictions breed creativity because people say, what can I do to a card to make them remember me? And so there's this Flickr set that I put on there of creative business cards that can give you just so much inspiration for thinking outside of the box. That one out. Found is a website where a lot of these assignments sort of came out of because these are some of the viral things that are happening right now. Someone's taking... you know, the idea of Star Wars and turning it into an invoice or something like that. That's the kind of stuff that would show up on Found. Dribbble is a website where designers can go on there and they can post little screenshots of what they're working on, which sounds, you know, completely mundane, but it's also kind of interesting too, right? Because some designers are doing really incredible stuff. So if you go on there and look at the most popular stuff, you will be inspired by some really, really beautiful work in Photoshop, and whatever else. There's a book cover archive. I mentioned children's books, but just in general, book covers are a great source of inspiration. Information is beautiful. I'm really tempted to do one of those cool infographics because I think that it's a cool way of telling a story using data, which is normally so boring, and making it something really beautiful. And informationisbeautiful.net is a website where they take a look at some stuff like that, trying to make something as boring as data look like something amazing and something interesting. And the last one, it's design related, but it's more related to video, is Motionographer. If you're just starting to get into video and you're thinking, what's interesting? What kind of things can I get into and start getting inspiration from? Subscribe to that website because really some of the best and beautiful videos show up on there. They link to them. So check that out. I've rambled on for about 40 minutes now, so I'm going to shut up at this point. If you've got questions, hit me with those. And Jim, if you've got questions or if you just want to talk about stuff, let's talk about it for a little bit. I've talked enough, I think.
Yeah, that was impressive. That was a full blown and what's great, what I really like, what I saw, and I've been monitoring it very closely on Twitter and going back and forth with my my nutball students. Is, you know, they, once you start mentioning the Super Bowl, Black Eyed Peas,
right,
Glee, many people were linking to, Colleen linked to her favorite mashup from Glee. I have to see Glee. Lisa Lane brought it up. Now you brought it up. I think I got to sit down and catch up on this series.
I love Glee. It's like I love it.
I did with Twilight last semester, although I like Twilight because it's bad. I mean, that's a particular thing for me. And I also did
it's so bad, it's good.
Exactly. Like, I like the dude. I like the dude who's like plays the werewolf who never has a shirt on.
Right.
I think that's awesome. Like, if I look like him, I guess, with the long, and then he cuts his hair, but like, he's always like, I love, like, me and my wife were sitting around and like we turn around and he's like dressed, and then 2 seconds later he's got his shirt off and it's raining, and like, you know, the raindrops are going around his nipples, whatever. It's like, it's just crazy. I just love the kind of sexualization of that guy.
Right.
But anyway, this point that comes up when you touch on them, I find it interesting that I can feel the pulse of the class get a little bit kind of excitable.
Yeah.
And what my point is, and this is one of the things that kind of I'm really still thinking about with DS-106, and I want your opinion. What do you think about the kind of, and it goes out to anyone else on Twitter, feel free to jump in on this. What do you think about how much this class is indulging popular culture? You know, I mean, this came up last week with Audrey, and Audrey was like, I was starting to wondering what's the point of this class, and she even had something tonight where, you know, do I want to be uncomfortable? But The point is, how much are we using this space design, the visual? We'll see with the mashup, which you've already brought up tonight. Are we using this place? What is our relationship to it with pop culture? What are we doing here? I mean, is this academic? Is it scholarly? Is it creative? Is it all those things? Have we thought about academics in the wrong way for certain regards? I mean, what I like the fact that it's unclear and that a lot of students should be uncomfortable about it. But from your take, because I love what you've said tonight, I love the kind of the sensibility you bring to this. What do you think about that? I mean, what would you say is happening here?
Oh, geez. Like, if I had to define what was happening here, I don't even know what I'd say. Because, I mean, who the hell knows what this is? I mean, goodness gracious. But,
okay, pull back. What do you think about the popular culture?
Pop culture. So, you know, we've talked about Glee and things like that. I think there is some ideas of pop culture and the stuff we see on TV and the stuff we see on design that absolutely has no value. It's meant for you to come in there. It's meant for you to feed off of it as a consumer and get absolutely no value from it. Reality television to me is that. And there are times, and I say that saying that there are times where that's all I want to watch, and that's fine. You know, if I don't want to get something out of TV, if I'm sick and I'm at home and there's nothing else, and you know all that's on is going to be, you know, Real Housewives, I don't watch it, I swear. But you know, then that's fine. But to me, that has no value. Watching other people argue about their lives is not going to make yours any better whatsoever. And so there are some portions of pop culture where I think we can improve on. And so I think that's what it's about, is looking for areas where there are things in society, and things where we can get inspiration, things where we can make changes and look at stuff in a different light. The crazy thing that's happening right now too, and it just popped into my head, is that a lot of stuff that we're seeing come into the television, that we're seeing come back into radio and things like that, are being inspired by stuff that's happening on the web. And who the hell would have ever thought that something like that would happen? This guy has this Twitter account where he's talking, you know, can I seriously cuss on here?
Yes, like, you can cuss.
Okay, so this guy has this Twitter account called Shit My Dad Says, right?
Yeah, sure.
I don't know if you ever saw that.
Absolutely.
This guy starts tweeting on Twitter about just these crazy random things that his dad says. Then he gets a book deal. Now it's going to be on television, and William Shatner is going to be playing the dad. Like, who would have ever thought that something like that would happen? So the thing is, we can inspire pop culture. It's not just about us becoming consumers. And I think it's about us being the producers, us driving popularity, driving interesting things, making change. So to me, that's what it's doing for me in some respect in terms of pop culture. There's a lot more that it's doing for me on a personal level. But if nothing else, I want to make my world more beautiful by taking out the reality television and the things that I find no value in and replacing it with stuff that can make things better.
That's interesting that you should bring up the idea of how the web now is feeding back into our traditional means of media, like TV, radio. Although for many of the people in my class, I think it's awesome. It's like, you know, web is one of those traditional means of media. It's not like there was a media before then, you know, which is, to me, I love that idea. Like, you know, the idea I have of, like, there was the ABC, the CBS, and the NBC, and that was it. Then cable came. You know, no one really is like, what? You know, shut up, old man. But the idea, but the idea is this. Me and my wife were watching HBO the other night, and on HBO comes Funny or Die. Now, Funny or Die was a website, right? And it was kind of a big website where comedians went and they kind of did this. Well, I mean, Funny or Die, I don't, some of it's funny, some of it's not. I kind of go back and forth with what I think is funny on that show. I'm not sold on it. It's no Eastbound and Down, let me tell you that. But the thing I like about it is if you watch the way they design the site, the actual show, it actually has a beautiful sense of 60s and 70s design. And I really love the project you brought up and talked about, like, go back through the decades and look at how clothing, packaging, you know, pictures, whatever the aesthetic of the time was, and start reproducing some of that, like, you know, the Russian aesthetic of the Soviet era. And, you know, it's funny how the web has kind of made bringing that back that much easier. And it's funny that Mad Men gets all the credit for the 60s and how good it looks, but, like, you look all over the web and you see so many people doing that so much better than I think Mad Men even does on their own websites. You know what I mean?
Someone mentioned The Social Network. I just did a poster the other day on them, but I mean, award-winning film, award-winning website, not award-winning website, award-winning film, and it's all about a website that we use every day that's not even 10 years old, barely probably even 6 years old at this point. That is nuts that something can be such an ingrained part of our lives at this point, and it didn't exist 10 years ago.
Yeah, although, you know, the thing about that David Fincher film is that very little of it seems to be about the web. It seems to be like an attempt to speak for our generation now, not my generation. I really don't think I'm part of that generation to the same degree. But to speak for the generation as a kind of sense of their alienation and the whole idea of like friends and the kind of devaluing of even that concept. And I don't know. I think it's kind of a – I mean, I don't know. This could be a point we could bring up, you know, maybe in the chat or somewhere else. But, I mean, I think Social Network as a film doesn't really get at – the real the complexity of this culture. I hate to think that you know people right now think that's our kind of battle cry for who we are. It's like it's like so then why don't you just get off the web and shoot yourself? You know what I mean, like what the hell is coming out of that? You know, it's just more like biopic bullshit. Like, look at this great little kid who made himself $1 billion and was a prick all the way along. It's like that's not interesting. You know, I mean, it's, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm still stewing about that film. So I'm open to debate about that. But the other thing is, and this came up for me, I think this is, I mean, the resources you talked about, but I really love this idea, and it builds nicely on what I tried to talk about with the Daily Shoot and even with the design. And there's two ways to think about it. And I want to get your feedback on this. The idea that what creativity is it's not a God-given right. I mean, sure, there's people who maybe are just, you know, there's the Picasso. I don't know where that comes from. I'm not an artist of that caliber, and I don't pretend to be. But I love the idea that it's a sense of training, it's a sense of habit, and it's a sense of kind of wanting to do it. And this idea of DS-106 as that creative family that, you know, I personally never really had. And I'm loving it. So I just love that construction. So thank you for that. I'm going to borrow that and steal that liberty. I mean, I really love that. But the other thing is this idea of the mashup, this idea as design, as a kind of critical intervention into our culture right now. It's something I picked up on last week. Actually, not even last week, just Tuesday. But it seems like you're actually bringing that to the fore now, talking about what is, I mean, it's a critical intervention in our culture. And I think the key piece of that critical intervention is based on everything you're talking about tonight about we are, in some ways, artists. We actually have now the tools by which we can intervene. Right. I mean, an interesting point is a student last semester in DS-106, that great, wonderful course, actually came up with his own game. It was called Fusketball. And him and his friends up in Northern Virginia had come up with this game and had really built up all the rules. And he blogged about this regularly over the course of the semester. Well, what's interesting is he had his own space. He had his own kind of publishing house. He had his own great ideas. And what happened is ESPN picked up on this, right? And so his idea and his little independent publishing space, which was his own, actually fed into a larger community. Now, I don't think that kind of – my opinion isn't that didn't justify his idea and make it like now it's real because ESPN picked up on it. But how could have a student, even 5 years ago, no less 10 years ago, have their idea on a regular basis picked up and amplified to the degree that we can now? Like, I can see the fact that the design stuff that is happening in this class, some of that could go viral. And you talked about this idea of viral. What do you think is at the heart? Why should educational institutions at all be interested in, you know, having their students think about what is viral and what's not?
I mean, here's what's happening. Right now, we're in a time where more than ever, I mentioned a bunch of tools that 10 years ago we never could have imagined that all of that stuff could be at all everybody's fingertips at once. Like that we could all just go out there and start editing photos and creating this stuff. We got our stuff from magazines, from the TV, from everything else, and it was fed to us. And really, we were just consumers of that. If you wanted to create that, you had to go to school for it, and you had to go to college, and then you had to learn how to do it, and then corporation that was creating that stuff. But now, more than ever, if you want to be a producer, if you want to create your own stuff, you can do that with no prompting whatsoever, like just going out there, creating your space on the web and starting making stuff.
Yeah.
And so I think it's that transition from a society built around consumption to a society that more and more is getting comfortable with the idea of producing amazing things. And I think the other portion of it, like you said, is carving your space out on the web. And why that's important is because you now have a microphone. You now have a way of reaching people. I have a way of talking to people all over the world right now about design. And that's something that never would have happened. I mean, are you kidding me? So yeah. you are given a platform and the ability to speak and to show and to throw your stuff out there in a way that you never would have gotten those kind of eyeballs before. And it's allowing really beautiful things to come to the forefront that never would have been seen before.
Yeah. It actually reminds me, and this is one of my favorite YouTube videos, and I'll find it and share it. But I saw, I mean, Francis Ford Coppola during the 70s, I think, made some of the great films ever, right? I mean, mm-hmm. He had five at least great films. The Conversation, Godfather 1, Godfather 2, and then he made Apocalypse Now, and I'm sure I could find a fifth, whether it be Rumblefish or Outside. I mean, just... And Rumblefish Outsiders was in the 80s, but you get the idea. I mean, he was a genius. Well, he went on and then he made Jack, which totally pissed me off, and Dracula. Right. But, I mean, and that's kind of his unevenness drives me crazy, too. But anyway, he went and his wife made a film based on his making of Apocalypse Now, and it was called Heart of Darkness. And it was a documentary about his making of Apocalypse Now. And, you know, Francis Ford Coppola has one of the, I think, most remarkable moments in that documentary. It's at the very end of the documentary, and his wife is asking him about the future of film. I mean, he had just made this epic film about, you know, basically the Heart of Darkness based on Joseph Conrad's novel, built into this whole Vietnam thing. It's just an epic, epic film. And she asked him, what do you think the future of film is? And, you know, Coppola said, you know, kind of just, he said, the future of film is video. And the future of film is not people like me making auteurs or directors, which he is, and he admitted to. He's like, it's going to be that fat girl in Ohio who no one ever knew, who was able to make a video and publish it so many can see it, who's going to be our next Mozart, who's going to be our next Beethoven.
Yeah.
And I was fascinated by this because when I saw the video, when the film, when it came out, it was 1992, 1993, the web was just about to blow up for popular consumption, right?
Yeah.
Or even popular production, depending on how you look at it. But, I mean, this was, he said this in like 1979, 81, around that point. And this is 20 years before we really started to see the realization of the fact that we don't now understand how to train someone at our universities to think about what's happening on the web yet. I mean, DS-106 is interesting to me because it's an actual intervention in this space to say, look, you take this for granted. You take this as fun, the whole kind of ideas. You kind of disregard it as, oh, yeah, that's this cute little thing or that's just something else someone else is doing, but it's not serious.
Right.
But to me, it is probably the most serious development of the 21st century right now is the fact that we do have the means of production in our hands. And universities are not dealing with that at all. They're ignoring it. They're putting their hands in the sand. And DS-106 steps out against that idea, right?
And the beauty of it, too, I should mention this when I talk about beautiful stuff coming to the forefront. What's beautiful for you may not be beautiful for everyone. And so sometimes I see these videos that are incredibly popular on YouTube, and I'm just like, are you kidding me? I don't even understand. There's this kid, you know, you talk about this girl from Ohio or something. There's this kid, I don't even know where he's from, called Fred. And he's got this YouTube channel. And basically all he did was he went into GarageBand or whatever, and he made his voice this high-pitched squealing sound and talks extremely fast because he speeds up his videos to where he talks so insanely fast you can barely even understand what he's saying. And he acts like an 8-year-old. And he was like 15 at the time he started doing this. And I saw one of these videos because people were talking about him getting very popular, and I thought, I don't really understand what this is. And I looked down at the views, and he's got a couple million. And I'm like, are you kidding me? And it wasn't just a couple million views on that video. That's how many people were subscribing. People were saying, I want this every single day. I want to get more of this. He now has his own show on Disney and several other deals for, you know, action figures and crap like that. And it blows me away that some kid had this idea that he could do this, went and had the tools to be able to make that happen. And to me, I get no value out of it whatsoever. But for a whole group of younger kids, it's something that really speaks to them in some way. And really, I mean, it's just incredible.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, and I think that's one of the things I like about it. I mean, I like the fact that it defies logic. It defies any one form of compartmentalization. And, I mean, I love higher education. I'm a part of it. I believe that its value is real. But I also believe that in some ways there's this been kind of this distension or this kind of really this divorce. And this goes to my whole idea about film. But now, even with social media, is like there's this divorce from the popular media that I think we really do need to understand. We need to engage. And we need to actually intervene within to think about. Now, I think it's a fair criticism. It's like, okay, yeah, once you start doing that, though, it becomes uninteresting. It's like laying it out on that etherized table, right, like T.S. Eliot says, and just dissecting right. it. But I don't think it has to be that. I think a part of the process that we've gotten away, particularly at a liberal arts college like Mary Washington, is the engagement of the process and the kind of space, allowing for the space to create and to make mistakes and to have mm-hmm. fun. And to me, the design that you've been talking about and the kind of this design is a new element in this class. I mean, we did the visual and then we did the fan fiction, but the design kind of, once I started seeing your assignments and once I started seeing the stuff you were doing, design really took on its own life for me. And I think the idea of how we design the world in which we live, and that goes to urban design, that goes to development and planning, it goes to the movie posters we see all around us, it goes to the commercials we see on the TV, it goes to the way in which Chipotle is designed as a particular, whatever it is, it's everywhere. And this sense of intervening within that design as both a student, you know, and I'm sure art classes teach this all the time, but DS-106, to answer your question earlier, is not an art class. It's not a writing class. It's a computer science class. It is a 100-level class, and it is something that most students need in order to graduate. They need at least one part. They don't need DS-106 to graduate. They need one of these requirements, and this is an arts requirement at a 100 level. So what we have, who we have taking it, to give you an example in my classes right now, you have anything from business administration majors to psychology majors to history majors, English majors, biology majors, chemistry. It's everybody, right?
Yeah.
It is no one particular discipline, and I love that. Because it actually, and they don't know what they're in for in terms of work. You know, they come in and they think, and then they get bowled over and then they get pissed at me. And then the piss turns into, ultimately, they get a little bit like, all right. And then by the end of the semester, if, you know, if they did it, they realize that there's, you know, there's something cool maybe here. But the whole point of this experiment is to think about where does universities actually really stand within the intervention, because we understand them as places as research, we understand them as places as kind of, you know, producers of what we understand as the cultural values. But let's face it, do universities have any power over what is a cultural value now that the web has come online? I think, you know, they have very little say. I mean, I think if they're not engaging it and thinking about it and wondering how this unbelievable tool that they created with the ARPANET works, then I really think it's a sign of their cultural relevance.
Right.
You know, it's and like you said, this kid Fred, he can get this kind of broadcast channel and he can subscribe, millions of people can subscribe to his weird voice. I mean, what does that mean?
Yeah. Noise Professor had a really good question I noticed on Twitter. He was asking about the perfectionist instinct in relation to design, and like, how much is good enough? Is being a perfectionist a good thing, or can it be a hindrance? And like, I guess the idea being, when are you complete with the project, and how soon should you put it out there? And I would say, in that respect, it's different for everyone. For me, I try not to work on stuff for too long before putting it out there and saying, you know, help me make this better. If not to say that I'm going to put out an unfinished product in too many different ways, but to me, and I am a bit of a perfectionist, but I can feel myself when I get to a point where I'm just nitpicking on things, then I need to just hit publish. I did a blog post really early on that talked a little bit about. Inside your head, where you just have to stop getting into the idea that you've got to package something in this beautiful, beautiful form before you put it out for the world to see. Save that for your final project. You know, if you're thinking of ideas of something, this massive thing that you want to create, but for these smaller assignments and these things where you're just trying to jog your creativity, just make something and have the balls to just throw it out there, to just say, here's what I did, it's not perfect, help me do something better. And then the next day it will be, because people came on and told you, you could try this, you could try this, you could try this. And those kind of comments would have never happened if you didn't publish. If you didn't ship it, then you wouldn't have gotten that kind of feedback that can help you make something better. So I would say fight the perfectionist instinct and just make stuff, and then get that feedback and that criticism, and that can help you make even better stuff.
A couple of things I want to address. Thank you, and that's awesome. And that brings up two questions in this class, and I'll let you branch on both of them. One is, you saw early on when DS-106 was getting started, even before the semester started, people were worried about that perfectionist. Like, I don't want to put something out. I'm afraid of somehow failing. And I'm wondering if that's, and Tom Woodward blogged about this in Bionic Teaching, I'm wondering if that's a kind of byproduct of how we've thought about education all told. How we thought about, like, you know, you're in competition with your classmates. And, you know, this whole idea of, like, I'm worried that mine won't be as good as someone else's. It's like, you know, that's a mentality that it won't serve you at all in DS-106 if you're not challenging yourself. You know what I mean? And Alan Levine had a great post about that, too. But, I mean, to me, that goes directly out of that. The other question that Audrey brought up is this idea of, you know, practicality. Well, I, you know, she sees the value of the idea, but what about practical applications? And what do you think about that in terms of practical applications and the stuff we're talking about?
Practical applications for the design work that we're doing?
Design work, you know, the photos.
Or just DS-106 in general?
Yeah, DS-106 in general. Because, I mean, I'd like to hear what you think. I have some ideas, too. So let's riff and see where we go.
Oh, man, I thought about it again and again, because it's easy from the outset to just say we're all just having fun and playing, you know. But that's just so much devalues what's happening, I think, because I think it's a whole lot more than that. You know, I thought of this quote, and it was so important to me because it really, for me, summarized what DS-106 was going to be and what I needed out of my blog. That I put it, if you're looking at my blog post right now, if you look up, you will see the quote on there. And it's all, I don't even know right offhand, but let me read it real quick to you. So, and this would be the goal of one's life, to find their stories. It's not all about producing amazing things, but it's about finding out a little bit, for me anyway, and I will say DS-106 I think is probably different for different people, especially for us that are taking it online. You know, a lot of your students took it because they had to, or they had to take a course like that. But for me, I have to do this, and that's what kind of makes it interesting when you talk about, you know, this idea that you know, are people afraid to put stuff out there? I don't want to fail this, do that. And those ideas come in with some of us that are doing it online, too. Like, that's inherent to the way we think of the idea of a course. And I think that was one of the things Tom was touching a little bit, was this idea that, you know, a course has to be this, like, rigid thing that's got a syllabus and an idea, and you do this, and you will do that, and you'll do it in order. And so I have to try and break out of once in a while because I'm doing the online portion of it, and I'm not doing this for a grade. I'm doing it for myself. And so for me, I have value in all of this, and they're not assignments, because for me, I'm really finding my voice. And yes, the web has given us a microphone to be able to talk, but if you don't know what to say, you've got nothing. So for me, that's what DS-106 is doing. Is it's not just giving me a platform. It's not just giving me a venue to do work, but it's giving me the environment and the creativity and the group of people to where I can really find what I want to say and then make that happen.
Yeah, and that's very well said. This idea of finding your story and your voice, which I think is the key to, you know, what you do over this course of the semester, is you got to find that practical application. And Noyce Professor also said, like, what could be more practical than creating culture? I mean, right. And I actually, you know, resist practical applications of this stuff a lot. I think once we start thinking about how will this help you do X, how will this help you do Y, sometimes we get outside of, we start routinizing and formulating what this should be rather than saying experiment with it. See what it is for you and find what your voice is, and also make your own interventions with the culture you want. Make that decision for yourself. You know, a kind of pragmatic approach to a class like this in many ways might close down before it even starts the possibility for people to explore. And it's a good question, and it's one I want to kind of keep in mind, because but I really love your answer about this idea of finding your story. I think it would be an interesting kind of idea to frame, and that's how I've been framing the digital stories, but I think I should make it more articulate, like you just did, about how that digital story should be about them framing and reflecting upon what their voice is, what their story is, what do they want to do. I mean, how many places at the university level, and this is one of my fears, and I'm sorry to get ed tech on you, but I always go back to this in some ways, is, you know, one of my fears is that the university becomes a space where we actually routinize the idea of disciplines. We routinize the idea of learning. We routinize the idea of conception, and especially when you promise your students that they come to a small school, not many people, with a liberal arts tag. Like, you promise them this idea that they're going to actually move away from some of that, and they're going to reflect on who they are, and they reflect on how they learn, and reflect about what the ways they think, and also make the idea of creation and participation and intervention within culture a key element of that education. And if you don't get it at the university, and if you don't get it at high school, and if you don't get it wherever you don't get it, maybe you do, but if you don't, you know, the fact is there's a tremendous community out there, and you're unbelievable example of this, Noyce Professor, Lisa M. Lane, all the folks out there rocking out, that maybe you don't need school. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, maybe school's for fools, right? Maybe there's another way. Yeah. That's my whole kind of question. Like, I think sometimes we get too kind of comfortable with the idea of school. And I'm, you know, to speak on a personal note, I'm unschooling my kids. I'm not sending them to school. I'm just letting them do whatever they want with the idea that, you know, learning isn't an institutional affair. It's just not.
Right. It's something that we're constantly doing.
Yeah. And
it's culture. It's what we,
But we've kind of abstracted it. We've, you know, abnormalized it. And I don't know. So anyway, I mean, I know this was design, and I'm getting into my whole education thing, but I mean, I think it's an interesting thing to start thinking about, because, you know, what you're talking about and what you're saying is everywhere around us, we see the design of our culture, and we have the ability now, through our own narrative, to intervene in that design, or to actually reframe it and make it more beautiful. And that's what you're doing.
Yeah. I don't even know if I have anything else to say. I'm trying to think, but goodness gracious, my brain's going to fry.
Well, look, we're at the end. It's 7:13.
Yeah.
Timmy boy?
Goodness gracious.
Thank you. You were awesome.
This is a lot of... Yeah, this is really awesome. So
you were awesome. I mean, I thank you for coming on. I know I asked you with last minute. I gave you no direction, but you were unbelievable. Now, check the DS-106 tag. That's questions and commentary are all there on Flickr.
I know
you'll be following that. And on Twitter. So I know you'll be following that.
People have questions for sure. You know, at reply directly to me or whatever you want to do. Just let me know. Comment on the blog, and we'll keep the conversation going.
Yeah, it was great. And as they're saying right now, that was a great class. I love the way you framed it. And if I wasn't here, you know, off track, you know, sidetracking you with my own little pet peeves. Forget it. Thank you, Tim.
All right, man.
Okay, I'll see you on the internet.
All right.
Keep it safe for democracy. Ciao. Take care, DS-106ers. DS-106, for life. For life.